Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. As you know, President Obama's press conference took up quite a bit of time. And so our guest, our first guest for today, Candy Andrews, who has written a new book called Beyond the Trees, Stories of Wisconsin Forests, has been rescheduled, and she'll be with us on July 13th. Really pleased that Ed Janis could hang around here. Ed is an author, historian, and journalist, and his new book is Creating Dairyland. And it's a wonderful book. What's the subtitle of it? How Caring for Cows Saved Our Soil, Created Our Landscape, Brought Prosperity to Our State, and Still Shapes Our Way of Life in Wisconsin. You have a farmer in your family, or did you farm? What did you take away from that? Do you support local producers? Why? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Post a question there, and we'll get that on for our guest today, Ed Janis, author, historian, and journalist. Ed, welcome.
Thanks, Larry.
after quite a wait, it's great to have you here. And I love your book.
Thank you.
It's a great story. Is this the heyday of the Wisconsin dairy producer, or what was the heyday of the Wisconsin dairy producer?
Wow, what a question. I would say it's all been a heyday.
Yeah.
I think we're doing very well. I think we're maintaining the strength of our countryside, our landscape, our cows. So I'd say if you want to look at a golden age, it may have been around the 1920s. There were more cows, of course, far more farmers, a lot more work, a lot heavier work. So, and very good prices right during the First World War.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to go kind of before that a bit, because you do such a nice job of giving us the history and what led to the dairying in Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, as I like to say in the book, at a certain point in Wisconsin ran a very grave risk of failing. Wheat had become the cash crop of the state. People were kind of crazed by wheat. They were clearing as much land as they possibly could, even land that shouldn't have been in wheat. They were planting wheat like crazy, selling it, of course, to England and the eastern part of the United States. And during the Civil War, they were doing very well, but they were just robbing the soil. And what was remarkable when I was researching this is to discover that there was this group of, I call them prophets, and I spell that in the biblical sense of prophet, although they preached prophets in the traditional economic sense, of course, but they looked out over Wisconsin and they saw people leaving in droves. I like to say that the new state motto was Westward Ho,
yeah,
because things were getting pretty bad. Then, of course, the cinch bug came and the wheat crop got ruined for years. People were really in despair. And these prophets, people like W.D. Hoard, for example, thought that they needed something to teach farmers how to be more responsible. Today, we'd say more sustainable. But yeah, that was, in my view, dairying was the first sustainability movement, the first environmental movement. Right, exactly. And so these people started preaching the gospel of the cow. The cow could save Wisconsin. The remarkable thing is it did.
Yeah.
I mean, look at us today.
It saved our soil?
Saved our soil, saved our economic virtue, is the way I put it. Because dairying was a get-rich-slowly scheme. So wheat was a get-rich-quick scheme. And, you know, when people start doing that sort of stuff, they get kind of stupid and they ruin things. So these dairy prophets were saying, no, no, no. Dairying is the occupation of a lifetime, of generations of people. You must build the soil. You must build the farms. You must build the herds. So this concept of building for the future, it really took hold in Wisconsin, and it happened in the period, say, from 1880 to 1920 when we converted to the dairy state.
Yeah, and I guess we also have to give credit to a lot of people, from farmers from the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like to say that the dairy revolution, and Larry, it really was a revolution. I mean, it's hard for us to imagine that today, but things were so different in this period 150 years ago. But these dairy revolutionaries were Yankees from New York mostly and New England, sort of Protestant scolds about the unhappy condition of mankind. And that was their idea, was to change not only how farmers earned a living, but how they thought about themselves, how they worked, and to make them much better men.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And when you say men, I think one of the big obstacles to overcome was the fact that it was considered only women's work.
Well,
dairying.
Exactly. There were reports, and I can't cite where they occurred, of near riots in the streets of some of these rural towns when these dairy guys would come in, men and women, preaching their gospel. They'd say, "We're not doing that. That's women's work. And besides, during the winter, you got to milk. What's the deal? We ain't doing that. You got to work all year round. What kind of nonsense? Farmers don't work all year round." That's sort of their argument.
Oh, man. it's interesting. You talk about so many things that needed to be put in place pretty much almost simultaneously for Wisconsin to become a major cheese producer as a part of this whole dairy business.
Go ahead, Larry.
No, I just, how did it all happen?
Well, it's the story. As I say, it's really a remarkable story. So consider Wisconsin in 1870, let's say. The land was depleted. The people were moving out. They were discouraged from farming. What are you going to do? How are you going to create an industry? And before this, during this period, farming was not an industry. You farmed, you sold, you got a little money, and you kept going every year. So they had to create an industry, even though they didn't think about it at that point. So you had to transform men into people willing to care for other beings. You had to teach them kindness. Yeah. You had to teach them diligence. You had to teach them science and how to think about profits, because the old farmers didn't really think much about profits. Then you had to have a market for this milk. Well, first of all, as you may recall, before pasteurization, milk was a killer.
Yeah.
Well, and also in the cheese factories, raw milk created, was often resulted in bad cheese. So you had all these issues to solve at once. And it started slowly. People built small, Hiram Smith, we talked about him before he went on the air. Hiram Smith built a small cheese factory. And what happened is, I like to think the turning point was the invention of the silo.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you could have enough good feed to get you through the winter with milk.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, with milk all year round, you needed labor all year round. Men could stay. Men staying meant they got married, because if you didn't have a job or land, you didn't get married. So the silo kind of created that. And then it also created enough milk to get to these little cheese factories. And as you got more and more milk into the cheese factories, people said, there's a buck to be made here. So let's get professional about this. Let's get industrial. And, these little romantic cheese factories of ours that people love to lament, the passing, they were the cutting edge of industry in their day. I mean, it was modern. And so that's the kind of things that had to have. Plus, you needed new science.
Yeah.
Better feed. It was an amazing achievement.
We have callers online to visit with you. By the way, if you'd like to join in with a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. George in Milwaukee, we go to you first. Hi, George.
Yeah, great story. I'm wondering, when I buy a gallon of milk, is there a way I can actually tell where that milk comes from? It'll usually tell me, like, the corporate headquarters of the company that produces it. But I'm wondering, is there anything else, perhaps, like there's extra numbers usually in the cell date by, and I'm wondering if any of that would be a clue, because I would like to support Wisconsin dairy farmers.
George, I don't know the answer to that, really. It's above my pay grade, I'm afraid. But I would recommend you contact something like the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board and just call them. They can give you exactly how to read those codes. I don't know. But you probably cannot find out the farm. In fact, I'm sure you cannot find out the actual farm that raised that milk.
But you can determine if it was the cattle were raised in Wisconsin. And for the most part, fluid milk, I think, comes from the fluid milk we drink in Wisconsin is pretty much Wisconsin.
I would think so. And I think a lot of the milk for our cheese is, and butter as well, comes from Wisconsin. So you could pretty well rest assured that it's Wisconsin, but not exactly where.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, George. And on to Dale in Rhinelander. Hi, Dale.
I have a question to your speaker. My great uncle was Philip Casper, who developed cheese in Wisconsin and everything else. Has anything mentioned in his book about Philip Casper from Bear Creek area?
Oh, from Bear Creek in Richland County?
No, Bear Creek he was in Waupaca County.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? The answer is no. There were so many guys that you might consider heroes in this early stages that I really just couldn't mention all of them. It was amazing to me is how many of these people sort of did their job sort of obscurely in those days. So I apologize. I don't know this gentleman.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Got an email from Russ in River Falls who says, I grew up on a dairy and beef farm in the Driftless area on the Minnesota side, although that was several decades ago. When I think back on it, I was always surprised at how each dairy cow had its own distinct personality. Often that personality varied from being outside in the pasture or being in a stanchion in the barn. Herd dynamics were quite interesting. From farm to farm, dairy herds were often quite different.
That's a wonderful question. You know, the thing that, one of the things I should say that really warmed me to this story is this relationship that our farmers have developed with their cows. It's not historic. I mean, it's fairly recent. And I like to say that dairy cows, in a kind of a way, selected the people to be in the barn. We selected the cows because they produced good milk or they had good feed or whatever. But in a way, it takes a very special person to relate to cows. Someone like you who can see that they do have personalities and like that. And not everybody got that in the early days. So cows selected the men and women who would care for them in the barn.
Yeah, that's a great comment. Thank you for that email. They do have quite different personalities, having milked a lot of cows myself. And in our herd, we had there was a head cow that always led the way back from the pasture and things of that sort. And one of the nice things about your book, not only the kind of the history that you have in it, Ed, but also the stories that you tell through the voices of many types of farm, many different farmers.
Yeah.
I was really pleased because Laura Daniels is one of the people you
Right.
you feature, and she was happened to be a student of mine. But.
Well, she learned very well, Larry. She's very informative, Laura. Yeah, you know, when I set out to revisit dairying, because I was a dairy farmer for 2 years only back in the 70s. So when I set out in the late 90s, early part of this decade, to talk to farmers, I didn't know what I was going to find. Were they all sort of, as I like to say, guys with ink on their fingers rather than manure on their boots? You know, what was I going to find? Well, the variety was huge. And the way they're responding to the changes in the market, the way they're responding to the changes in their world, the world of agriculture, really amazed me, I guess. And their personalities are easily as strong as the cow's personality.
Oh, absolutely. Barbara in Oconomowoc will give you a chance now. Hi, Barbara.
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one I think is the most interesting. And the obituary in the newspaper for like a great-great-grandfather, he was killed by a cheese press. And that's all it says.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry to laugh.
Well, I know it's funny. I can't figure it out unless it was a board on the side of the press that let loose and hit him in the head or something.
I don't even want to think about it. But, you know, let me remark on something, if you don't mind, Barbara. Dying on the farm was quite a common pastime in the old days when people kept bulls, for especially. A lot of people told me about their uncle who died because the bull got loose, or how the bull terrified their children. So,
well, that I understand. That
right.
I know about.
And when we think about, you know, now modern artificial insemination and everything, it seems so seems like such a clinical affair. But getting rid of bulls was a pretty good advance in the world of farming.
Yeah. Actually, I think the accident rate, it was one of the most hazardous occupations
right.
to be in, yeah. actually.
I'm sure it was. You could tell who was a dairy farmer by how many digits he had left.
Yes, quite true. Or arms, even.
Or arms, okay. Yeah, yeah.
My second question is, my great-great Uncle John, my grandmother's uncle, who I knew ran a butter factory. How common were butter factories?
Oh, and this is one of those wonderfully interesting sidelines of dairying that I never quite was able to get into. At one point in the 1930s, I believe, butter was king. It wasn't the enemy of the heart as it is today, you know.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But butter was king, and it's a very interesting story because if you look at where cheese was made in Wisconsin and where butter was made, you find it has a lot to do with hog country. So the butter people wanted to separate milk on the farm and keep the skim milk to feed the hogs. So it tended to separate out that way geographically.
Yeah, this is Jefferson County. Sir.
Oh, okay. So you had plenty of butter, water, right? Yeah.
No shortage of butter there.
Oh.
Thanks, yeah. Barbara.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And by the way, going back to an earlier caller who had a question about where the milk comes from and looking at the numbers on the container, Bree sent something to our Facebook page that's essentially you can click on it at Where Is My Milk From?
Oh, great.
And it's got an explanation. So if you want to go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, our previous caller or anybody else for that matter, you can click on that and it gives an explanation of how to figure out where your milk is from. A caller who couldn't stay on would like to know what percentage of Wisconsin residents are involved in the dairy industry in some way. And boy, that's a percentage I don't know. Ed,
I don't know it either. I do know, though, that the number of people who are farmers who live on operating farms is something in the neighborhood of 2%. So from 1870, let's say, we went from in the 70-80% of our people made their living from the land. Today, it's something like 2%. Having said that, there is lots of employment in the country, even in production agriculture. You got lots of milkers, of course. You have veterinarians. You've got laborers. So apparently there's still quite a workforce out in the dairy land.
Jody from Downing wanted to share that often if you shop at a local food co-op or even somewhere like Whole Foods, they carry locally produced milk. And, of course, Organic Valley is a co-op of small local milk producers, so that's something for
mm-hmm.
one of our
that's right.
earlier callers. And I'm glad she mentioned co-op, because cooperatives played quite a role in the dairy industry. Maybe you can talk about that, Ed.
Yeah, it was really one of the great Wisconsin innovations, although Wisconsin by no means was the only state to have co-ops. There is this historic, ideological battle in dairy land and in agriculture in general between people who think that the capitalists take everything and the people who think the farmers deserve more. Of course, all farmers think they deserve more.
Yeah.
So the co-ops early on were just farmers getting together and owning a cheese factory, hiring a cheesemaker and trying to keep the profits. But it really did grow until something like 70% of our milk was sold through marketing cooperatives in the 1930s and 1940s. And they were trying to control the price farmers got. Farmers are always trying to get more for their milk, and they should. But whether that was successful or not, you have to leave to dairy economists, because I don't know whether that was successful or not.
You do give quite a bit of space, and we talked about this briefly, to profile contemporary dairy people in Wisconsin. Talk a bit more about what you learned from visiting with these people.
So I really, really wanted to know why people stay on the farm. There are, of course, tremendous things you can do in the city and places to go and education to get. So what is it about being a dairy farmer that keeps people on the land? And this is essential for all of us in Wisconsin, not just economically, but if we want to keep this beautiful bucolic landscape that we so cherish, we need to make sure these people are willing to stay. So how are they willing to stay? And you may realize that there was a certain turning point in our history where you didn't have to stay on the farm anymore. Right. You weren't forced to by circumstances or a lack of education. So now today's farmers have all sorts of options. Why did they stay? And that's the great thing I discovered, the different reasons for staying. Mm-hmm. Certainly financial. There's the family histories. There's an industry people know. But that they love it is mm-hmm. the thing that I think people need to know. Why do they love being dairy farmers in Wisconsin? So I had lots of different answers for that because everybody has kind of a different answer. But a lot of it has to do with calves.
Yes.
There's something, as one of the people in my book says, miraculous. I mean, and she meant miraculous in the sense of a real miracle about a calf being born and taking its feet for the first time. That stuff is addictive.
Yeah.
You know, I brought calves into the world at midnight in our barn, you know, and there's nothing like it in the world, I don't think. So it's how do farmers find a way to be happy on the land? And as I say, it's a question which ought to concern us all.
And they're happy.
Well, they're human beings, you know, Larry, so they're not always happy. No. But they are
happy with their lives.
They are happy with their lives. It's a good life.
Yeah.
You know, as much as they complain about milk prices, and they do complain about milk prices.
Well, you have told a wonderful story in this book, Ed, and I thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's a short, I wish you could be here longer. The book is called, is titled Creating Dairyland, Edward Janus, our guest today, and it's a Wisconsin Historical Society Press book, and they did a wonderful job.
They really
did,
yeah.
The photography and the stories that are in it are great, and I hope we'll have another chance to talk about it.
Thanks, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Ed Janus, author, historian, and journalist, and his book, Creating Dairyland. I tell you what, it's a fun book, and I hope you have a chance to look at it. And I hope you have a chance to tune in tomorrow. Patricia McConnell will be here to talk about her latest book, Love Had No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your House.
After the loss of his last family member, Colin Thubrun journeyed to Mount Kailash in Tibet, the holiest mountain in the world. Traveling on foot, he questioned the way we see Tibet and confronted his own experience with death. I'm Jean Faraca. Join us on The Next Here on Earth. Today at 3 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Drs. Laura Tills and Matthew Cutts of River Place Dental, striving to provide comprehensive care in a relaxed, comfortable environment that can include